Welcome to International Women's Day programs at KPFA Radio. I'm Colleen Thomas. I'm a ritual artist, and I help people make sense of life through ceremony. This is Shame Pinata. On our journey through life, we will come upon moments that invite us to reinvent ourselves. Big changes can do this, like moving away from home, getting married, starting a family, or choosing not to start a family. How can we slow down in these moments and really honor what's changing? Really honor how we're changing? Welcome to Shame Pinata, where we talk about creating rites of passage for real life transitions. Today, we're going to go deep. Are you ready? We're going to dive into one of those moments that's really a rite of passage, an initiation, a change. One of those moments that ceremony is perfect for, because it invites us to use all of our creativity and all of our heart. And what's more, it invites us to use ceremony for what ceremony does best, to create a container to hold the strong emotions that come up with big changes. Tristy Taylor joins us today to share the story of her un-baby shower, a three-part ceremony she designed when she and her husband decided to stop trying to conceive. She took her time. She followed the threads of what was changing in her, and she ended up creating a beautiful ceremony that both honored her grief and was also a celebration.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does start with the journey my husband and I were on to make a baby together. And after trying the usual routes and discovering that nothing was happening, we entered the world of fertility treatments, medical intervention, and started down that road, which included some pretty powerful hormone therapy. That was quite a journey to be on that. Basically, all my emotions were at 11 all the time. So, like, you know, small inconveniences became like fiery, mountainous, rage-fueled tirades. And eventually did end up having a pregnancy, but then that pregnancy was... The pregnancy ended up being ectopic, so the fertilized egg embedded in my fallopian tube. And, you know, we didn't know that, and I ended up going to the emergency room one night with just intense abdominal pain, and they took one look at me and said, "You're bleeding internally, we need to open you up immediately." And then that's when they discovered that my tube had ruptured, my fallopian tube had ruptured. And after that experience, we kept trying, but it started to, all signs started to point to this was going to be painful and challenging and not really get us where we wanted to be. And my husband and I talked for a long time about what that choice meant to be child-free. And he kind of took it in stride and sort of said, "Well, I'm going to use that energy to do other things." And he, like, started his own business and, you know, spent a lot of time away from me and away from home, kind of diving into almost a little bit avoidant, perhaps, of his own feelings, but building this business that he'd always wanted to create and felt free to create now that we weren't trying to create a family, and all the sort of pressures that might have come with being a parent, it kind of freed him up. And kind of the opposite happened to me, where I just felt like my life had been pressed, like the pause button had been pressed on my life, and I didn't know what happened next. And being someone who really tries to show up to what's happening in my life, regardless of whether or not I understand it, I realized that I needed to honor this loss and to really allow some space and time to feel the grief of the loss of being a mother, and even this particular pregnancy loss with the ectopic pregnancy. And being an interfaith minister, I read a lot about all sorts of rituals, and I had recently read a really beautiful piece about the modern day of sitting Shiva for someone who had passed away from the Jewish tradition. Mm-hmm. And knowing that Shiva means seven days, and I really like felt the like ritual power behind that. I mean, it's a ritual, but that 7 days, like I really felt how to devote 7 straight days to my grief, where grief came first and nothing else had precedence over my sitting inside of my grief. My whole body just resonated with that. And it was like, yes, that's what we're going to do. Mm. And that's what I did. And I didn't really, other than my husband, I didn't talk to anybody. I ended up doing a lot of crafting, which felt really good. I ended up making these kind of heart-shaped sachets with like lavender and different herbs in them. These sort of calming craft sewing kind of stuff that was very focused, but I was also kind of putting my grief into these pieces that I was making. Mm. And yeah, it was very powerful time, and spent a lot of time in nature and just cried a lot, and didn't think about the future, what my life would look like. I just really tried to focus on the moment, which is challenging. You know, our Western culture really pushes us to get over our grief as soon as possible, not to dwell and like all of that stuff, when really I think the more we can show up for our grief, the more it can beautifully move through us. And we can truly let it go. We have to feel it first.
During the time of sitting Shiva with her grief, Tristy had a dream. In the dream, she was out in the snow, looking into a kind of hut, a hut that felt very ancient. Inside the hut, women dressed in animal skins were gathered around a very, very pregnant woman, putting oils on her and celebrating her. There was a fire in the hut, but Tristy was outside in the cold, and she knew through the knowledge that comes in dreams that she was not allowed into the ritual because she was not fertile and she would be bad energy for the pregnant space.
And I woke up crying and hurt, very hurt by the dream. And I also know from doing dream work all my life that no dream ever comes to hurt us and be like, look at you, you know, you're stuck. Haha, you know, our dreams always come for health and wholeness. And so I really sat with the dream. I drew pictures from the dream. I felt into it. And the gift that came out of the dream, because I do think all nightmares have a gift, the gift that came out of the dream was this idea for an un-baby shower. Because it didn't feel fair to me that I should be left out in the cold. And this transition that I was making is just as valuable as the transition of becoming a mother, the transition to not be a mother. And so I connected with 2 very good friends who are great ritual makers. And we started to piece together this whole ceremonial ritual around having this on baby shower, and it started with the grief. It started with doing a grief ritual with these two women and really having their support and being in nature together and making food together. And then that transitioned into this more celebratory shower space where about 18 women came to my house and painted my body with body paints and gave me blessings. And it was so interesting because it was raining at the beginning of the shower. So we all had to like jam into my little, 700 square foot house. And then by the afternoon, the sun had come up, and then I was all like covered in body paint, and we just went outside and we're just running around, and it was so joyful. There was so much joy. And the way I kind of completed the ritual was making this dedication to being a creator, being a spiritual guide, being offering my gifts to the world. If I wasn't going to be mothering a new life, then I would be holding this spiritual creative space for others. And it always makes me think of that Dolly Parton quote, because she also couldn't have children. She tried and she couldn't have them. And she just said, well, God just decided that I'm going to be mom to everybody's kids, And like, I just love that. And I love being, an auntie to my friends' kids. And that feels really like a powerful and important role as my aunties were to me as a kid. So that's how that all came about.
I love that. I love the way that you love ritual and you lean into it and into your dreams. And I love your stories because I love to hear you listening. The layers at which you listen inspire me. And remind me what you discovered about your grandmother and your great-grandmother.
Yeah. So my ruptured tubal pregnancy, where I had to have emergency surgery, was on March 3rd. And my mother told me that her mother, my grandmother, was born on March 3rd. And I remembered that her mother, my great-grandmother, died giving birth to her. So my great-grandmother died on March 3rd giving birth. And I had this emergency surgery that saved my life, and I would have died through trying to become a mother. Mm. So there was this fascinating karmic ancestral wound being healed, I believe. I didn't die. I survived. And I really do, from the ancestral work that I've done in my life, I've had visceral experiences, because time is not linear in that world. Like, time is a spiral. It's past, it's present, it's future, all at once. And so the healing that I did on that day and continue to do ripples back to my ancestors. And that's my female line. It's my mother's mother's mother. That all of that is relevant to my experience, and of course none of that was planned. It's just how it unfolded. It's one of those kind of magic, unexplainable moments, where we kind of put the pieces together afterwards, and it's like, oh, that seems significant.
I've always loved the physiological connection that we have to our grandmothers, because I always have trouble saying it. The egg that became me in my mother's ovary, that egg was in my grandmother's body, yes.
Isn't that amazing?
So crazy.
Yeah. Incredible.
I'm Colleen Thomas, and you're listening to Shame Piñata on KPFA International Women's Day special programming.
Tristi what her time sitting Shiva looked like.
It was really like grief first was kind of my mantra. Really like Tristi grieving first more than the grief itself. Like, because sometimes I was really angry. Sometimes I was really joyful. Sometimes I was very quiet and soft and just didn't want to talk. You know, I also followed the, like, trying to not have any electricity on at night, which was challenging for my husband. There were a couple nights where he just went to a friend's house so he could, like, watch TV and just be normal, because I'd be, like, with my candles, you know, at, like, 6 o'clock at night, like, quiet, where I just want to be quiet tonight. And he'd be like, okay, I'm going to do something else. It's like, yeah, that's cool. Do what you need to do, sir. But yeah, I was very, very committed to the process and not judging or controlling the process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I wanted to, like, make pancakes, I made pancakes. And if I wanted to, like, lie down in the dirt and cry, I would lie down in the dirt and cry. And when I would kind of feel myself sort of spinning away from the grief and distracting myself, I would just try to come back through crafting or journaling, you know, writing down my dreams. I made that like a very devoted practice in the morning, which would like take a couple hours sometimes, because I think I wasn't doing any electronics before bed. My dream life just exploded, which was like interesting, you know, like, of course that has an effect. So it was really like, well, like, Create with Spirit is like the sort of name of my blog and website. And it's like, that's how I see it. It's like, it's a conversation. We're co-creating with that spiritual, energetic part of ourselves, the place of ritual. Like, it's a conversation, and that's why no ritual is the same, I think, for everybody. Like, my own baby shower wouldn't be right for you necessarily. You know, there might be pieces of it that resonate or whatever, but I think we all individually can have a conversation with our, you know, our divine guidance, whatever the right words are, that we can have conversations. And I think we can do it through art. We can do it through dream work. We can do it in nature. You know, if we have that gift to really connect with animals or trees or flowers. You know, I work with a client whose spiritual practice is gardening, and she gets tremendous guidance out of her garden and her flowers and her vegetables and, you know, the animals in the earth, you know, the insects that show up. And it's a language that she understands. You know, I think we all have personal archetypes, and I think our dream life is really good at honing in on those archetypes. And, you know, a Siamese cat in my dream means something specific that might not mean in your dream. But like, when that Siamese cat shows up, I know it's my grandmother, my dad's mom, because she raised Siamese cats and loved them and, you know, always had the most like cross-eyed Siamese cats, you know. She would foster them where no one else wanted them, and they were probably going to be killed, you know, like inbreeding disasters, and she would take them all in. So it'd just be these like cross-eyed cats running into walls and yowling like Siamese do. And so when those cats show up in my dream, it's like, oh, hi, Grandma, you know, like, I see you. So I think the more conversations we have, the more we practice, the more we show up to our spiritual life, the more rich that language and vocabulary and archetypes can become, where it can truly be powerful tools in our toolbox.
Way back in 1909, French ethnographer Arnold van Gennep wrote a lot about rites of passage. He broke them down into three distinct parts: separation, liminality, and reincorporation. When I first read Tristi's blog post, I noticed that her ceremony also had three parts that aligned very closely with that scheme. I asked her if that was on purpose.
Yeah, it was not on purpose. I certainly wasn't, you know, anthropologically thinking about it on that level. And, you know, if you kind of flip it over, like, all he really did was write down what has always been true in the yeah. ancient ways.
True.
He just basically academized it or, you
right.
know, made it legit in the anthropology papers of the early 1900s, you know. But any, you know, native or indigenous shaman would have told you the same thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a very universal, again, not necessarily linear, but sort of hitting those three beats, I think is one of the most ancient things in the world. You know, as I shared before we started this interview, you know, having a friend of mine's father dying of COVID and not being able to be there because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of reminding him that the modality doesn't matter. Like, he's mm-hmm. still sitting with one of the most ancient rituals in the world, which is sitting with someone who is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heartbreaking that he can't be there in person, and it doesn't take away the ritual, the power, the moment of it. Mm. It's still yeah. happening. It's still part, he's still showing up for what he can show up for, and it's still the most ancient thing we can do. Yeah, and the liminality of death and of sitting with someone, you know, if you've ever sat with someone who's dying, the whole experience is liminal. You know, they're in and out of consciousness. They're, you know, all of a sudden they're 7 years old, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, speaking a language you don't know. And it's like there is no linear route through it. And everybody yeah. does a little bit differently.
Right.
You know, when I was doing hospice work as a chaplain, that was a very important reminder. Like, it's very rare to have that cinematic moment of saying goodbye to your loved one. Like, usually it's a lot of, like, sort of confusing conversations and, you know, sort of long, loving monologues that you don't know if they're hearing or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having yeah. to just let that be okay.
Yeah.
You know, just let that be perfect. You know, showing up to the moment, however yeah. it looks, with all its challenges.
Tristi's story inspired me so deeply because of the depth of her commitment to the process. Letting the grief ritual come to her, sitting Shiva for the 7 days, then creating the unbaby shower to return her to society as a woman who will not be having children. Listening to her story reminded me of my own journey on the road to motherhood and my ultimate decision not to go there.
I so appreciate hearing the story of the unbaby shower, because I went through my own process of figuring out, of having a moment in time in my life when I needed to decide which way am I going to go, towards mm-hmm. somebody who might want to have a baby, or to stay with somebody I really like a lot who is very clear they don't want a baby. And I was at the age where I had to pick, and it was a little hard, you know, because I felt like I was losing a lot. But then when I sat with it and sort of took apart all the pieces of being a mom, I realized that I only wanted certain pieces that were definitely not, didn't equate with having a child or trying to have a child. It was like not my thing, even though I felt so much pressure to be a woman in that way, and a lot of like legitimate grief and loss when I walked away from it, which isn't something I ever thought I would feel, but it was there. It was like, wow, okay, I had to go through these feelings, and my
right,
partner was
right.
was really, really there for me. And I sought out community. I put an ad on Craigslist for women who had chosen not to have a child who wanted to chat with me about it, and I had like four or five women to have conversations with me, which, you know, there's nowhere to go to find those women. So I found a few, and that really helped me feel like, okay, I'm not alone. And then I asked my mom, you know, what do you think? And she said, you never wanted kids, even when you were little. I was like, oh, okay, that helps. Thanks. Because, you know, I figured there was some wisdom there that she might be able to give me. That was very, very helpful. Plus, she never pressured me to have kids, which was immensely, immensely helpful on the journey to decide, you know, what was right for me. So I know a little bit about, I didn't go through the journey of trying, but I went through the journey of deciding, you know, deciding to walk away. Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing this story with me and with us. And I look forward to sharing out your blog post, with which has the some of the images from your journal, and you have the video walkthrough of your journal that you kept during the time.
Yeah, I'm glad to share it with you and anyone who resonates or is inspired to create their own ritual. And, you know, I mentioned the blog post that part of it was inspired by a woman who had a ritual around starting menopause and what that meant to her. So I really love to encourage others to think about those major life transitions, like even like leaving a job and starting a new one, or moving to another state, which I'm about to do. Like, I've been thinking about, like, oh, I'm going to be letting go of California, you know, and what does that mean to me as born in San Francisco and, you know, born and raised here. So I think there's lots of space for ritual in our lives if we make it.
Yeah.
If we have that conversation and we listen and respond.
I am so grateful to Tristy for sharing a personal and beautiful story with us. I don't know about you, but I am super inspired by her and her work. If you have dealt with infertility, made a similar decision to let go of having children, have experienced a miscarriage, or if you've simply chosen not to follow that path, know that you're not alone. There is a community out there of women who get it. Thank you so much for joining us today. Tristy Taylor is an interfaith minister and ritualist, providing support and companionship to those that live on the fringes beyond traditional religion. She firmly believes that all people deserve to have rituals and ceremonies that honor life transitions, regardless of their spiritual beliefs. She has had major personal life experiences around grief and death, and is comfortable supporting others during these very human experiences. You can find out more about her work at createwithspirit.com. Our music is by Terry Hughes. You can hear more stories like this on the Shame Pinata podcast, available on your favorite player. Learn more at shamepinata.com. I'm Colleen Thomas. Thanks for listening. Please stay tuned to enjoy the next International Women's Day program on KPFA.